Things not exactly off to a perfect start in Chicago. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Okay, this is according to Courtney Cronin, who's covering Chicago Bears training camp. The team did an 11-on-11 period, had a pre-snap penalty, a fumbled snap, issues getting out of the huddle in a moment when Caleb Williams fell down after evading pressure. Now listen, we get it. They're practicing. We're not going to really take anything away from this, but Pearl, you were surprised, I think, that it looked this sloppy this early on.
No, I wasn't surprised.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think Caleb Williams is a gigantic question mark.
Oh, okay.
Right. I mean, listen, what was his problem last year, right? He holds on the ball too long, and Ben Johnson does not suffer fools. He's like, supposed to be this super intense guy, right? Like, everyone talked about the Lions, like, Ben Johnson was crazy, basically. Mm-hmm. So I can see Caleb Williams going, even in practice, dropping back and not letting it rip, and then driving Ben Johnson crazy. Don't you see? I'm not saying that can't be worked on, but at first, the marriage is a little weird because Ben Johnson is like built a very much a system guy. Caleb Williams, that's his problem. He likes to freelance, right? Isn't that his reputation?
Well, I mean, listen, he did that in college, but I think we all know that there are things you can't get away with in the NFL that you got away with in college,
but
right?
But then he came in the pros and held on the ball way too long. He took way too many sacks.
Well, it's one season, and he did not have a good offensive staff around him, nor a good head coach, and all those guys are gone. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I'm not doubting that Ben Johnson, who, you know, fantastic dynamic play caller for the Detroit Lions. I have no doubt this guy can run an offense. Absolutely not. I just am interested to see the dynamic between the two, how that works. And I'm going to be honest, when the interview came out where Caleb Williams and his dad go completely on the record, not hiding from it all, when they talked to author Seth Wickersham about their doubts going to Chicago, I get you're paired with Ben Johnson now, but do you think those shreds of doubt and those seeds of doubt are completely gone? Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is I think there are potential potholes moving forward where I don't necessarily see this whole thing as smooth sailing from like a personality point of view. Also, you're saying from the, is Caleb Williams going to like buy into the game plan or execute the game plan for Ben Johnson?
Yeah, well, execute. I'm sure he wants to buy in, but I don't know if he's capable of doing it. I actually worry. You know, you almost sound like, is Chicago good enough for Caleb Williams? I'm starting to worry, is Caleb Williams good enough for Chicago? I mean, it seems like the possibility of him not working out seems real now.
And you were not thinking that before.
No, coming into that, if I was like, he's Caleb Williams. I saw him when he was at Oklahoma just tear apart Texas. Like, we all knew he was the real deal. It like, seemed like a guaranteed. But then you saw him last year, and I don't know, he just does some things wrong. Like, and Ben Johnson, I think, would be very, you know, Jared Goff was his quarterback, right? Coming in, disgraced out of L.A., and did everything the coach wanted and ran the system perfectly and got rid of the ball really fast. I just don't know if Caleb Williams is going to be able to do that. And if it doesn't work out this year, that's 2 years, two coaches in, then we're getting into dangerous territory.
Well, and then you're going to have Bears fans who are saying, well, here we go, same old Bears, you know, and they have, and this time something really good happened to them because Caleb Williams clearly has a lot of talent. Maybe Ben Johnson can coach it out of him. But my question is about, sure, that the football side, no doubt, obviously, because if they win, everything's going to be fine. If they lose, well, then the pressure starts to mount. And, you know, where you and I see our biggest disagreement, I think, about the Bears this upcoming season is you are very bullish on Ben Johnson, that he's going to be a great head coach.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not. Yeah. So I want to see it because I feel like I've been sold a lot in the past of, oh, this offensive guru is phenomenal. They're going to be a great head coach. And that doesn't always happen. Like, for example, what's going on in Washington now? Cliff Kingsbury, fantastic offensive coordinator. Is he a great head coach in the NFL? I don't think so.
I'll bet you he gets another shot.
And because
dude won 11 games his first year.
And then what happened? It got worse and worse.
But if Ben Johnson had an 11-win season, we'd be building a statue for him outside Soldier Field.
Well, Matt Nagy won Coach of the Year in Chicago, and he was looked at as the next offensive guru, and he couldn't do it when he got into the head job.
True, very true. At least you didn't bring up Adam Gase, which would have been.
I could have brought up. I just want to save EJ today because, you know.
But Matt Nagy was never like Ben Johnson. Like, Ben Johnson designed the offense, called the plays. Nagy was under Reed. We had no idea.
It's just, I think it is not exactly the same skill set to be an offensive coordinator as you are a head coach.
Feels like he's Kyle Shanahan to me. I feel like the two remind me so much of each other.
Great. If he turns out to be Kyle Shanahan, that's phenomenal. But you know, I want to see a little of that. So I guess this where my doubts come in about what could happen with Chicago is not just the Caleb Williams could still take a lot of sacks and this could not be as productive as they want, but also are the two of them going to be a good enough marriage where Ben Johnson actually is a really good head coach, not just offensive coordinator and play designer, but also handling the entire team, handling the adversity in a, you know, in a much more public setting. Like, he never had to stand up there after the Lions lost the NFC Championship game. He didn't have to stand at the podium, you know, the way that Dan Campbell did. So he's been shielded from a lot of that. He is a fiery dude who's got kind of like a, I don't know if the word, probably abrasive is probably too much, but super ridiculously intense.
Yeah.
And sometimes the really super intense guys can burn out and burn bright, but burn out. And so I guess I'm just a lot, there's a lot I want to see in Chicago before I'm penciling anything into anything, like any playoff stuff or that Ben Johnson is the next Kyle Shanahan or that Caleb Williams is the next Patrick Mahomes or whatever.
Yeah, the guy I don't trust is Caleb. I trust Ben Johnson more. And playoffs are going to be tough because they're in the NFC North. So that's the main problem here. If they were in a different division, it'd be much more feasible. But
Wait, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
You trust Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
The quarterback that he has now in Caleb Williams is so wildly different than Jared Goff. You just mentioned it.
Why do you think? How so?
Well, Jared Goff is timing, right?
He's executing, right.
So he and Caleb, who has been like the freelancer or who has been, you know, way more athletic, I think, than Jared Goff. Why do you think that Ben Johnson can have the same magic with a guy who is nothing like his previous guy?
Well, because I think Caleb Williams should be more like Jared Goff. Like, I don't think Caleb Williams wants to run that much. Like, he doesn't want to run downfield. I think Caleb Williams should be like Patrick Mahomes, or he should try to get in the pocket as much as he can and throw. Like, that's who he should be. He's got a great... What's Caleb Williams' superpower? It's not his scrambling. He's got a fantastic arm.
Yep.
Make this guy fit the system and look good, not what we had last year. Because every time he took off, like... You know what happens. The linemen are like, oh, God, we have to block again for this guy who's running around. He didn't see the receiver. Did you hear the Bill Belichick interview recently where he was talking about Tom Brady's superpower? He's like, the main reason Tom Brady worked in the NFL was because he got rid of the football.
Right.
He's like, you cannot move the ball forward if you don't get rid of it. So I think Chicago was so happy to get Ben Johnson because they wanted Caleb Williams to just let it rip, throw the football. Look at the play before it starts, know where you're going with it, and get rid of it. That would be an amazing Caleb Williams. That's what he needs to do.
Yeah, and Tom Brady did that and did it in a cold weather city in an outdoor stadium. So he was able to do it. Jared Goff was indoors a lot. They, you know, would have, what, 3 games a year where he'd play in any kind of weather. This is going to be much different than that. Do you feel like they can overcome, you know, there's a reason why no Bears quarterback has ever thrown for 4,000 yards, not just because the Bears quarterbacks have been disappointing, but also it's called the Windy City. It's very different. The cold you can play in, the wind, very disruptive.
Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre put together 7 MVP seasons at Lambeau. So that excuse doesn't fly.
Okay. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. You're welcome to weigh in on Caleb Williams and the Bears. Did you guys see someone handed the Pope a Bears t-shirt?
Yeah, EJ and I were talking about that yesterday.
Yeah, they're saying the Pope.
Yeah. I'm assuming he appreciates all that, right?
I'm sure.
Oh, more important development. Did you see Case Keenum saunter into camp the other day?
I did not. Your guy.
Your third string quarterback there. He has a Mike Ditka mustache that is fantastic.
I love it.
I got to be honest. Obviously, Case is there to be a third-string quarterback/coach. You know, he kind of helped Baker Mayfield back in the day. I really like Case being in that room. The room is Case Keenum, Caleb Williams, and there's another guy in there. Like, I don't know. I kind of like the vibes. Mm. And Caleb Williams seems like a nice guy. And I don't even think, like, you know how some quarterbacks just can't, you know, I don't know what they can't. It's not that he's not processing, but they have trouble throwing. I feel like Daniel Jones was like that a little bit for a big stretch. Like, they just need, Ben Johnson is going to be so tough on this guy, and it's going to be an ugly summer because he needs to get every bad habit out of him. He's just got to let it go. I think it's a mental thing. Honestly, I think Caleb Williams has all the talent in the world, but you see it, like, he's got to have faith that I know where to go with the ball and just do it.
I want to see Case now with this Ditka mustache. I'm looking for it online. I can't find it.
You guys know I'm impartial to the mustache. I got to see this too.
Yeah.
Go to the Bears Twitter. They tweeted it yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm totally into that. I want to also ask you guys something else besides the Pope. Well, I imagine his job's got to be pretty heavy. You know, people are always coming to you with the problems, I'm assuming, you know?
People are trying to kiss him. That's the biggest thing.
That's got to be tough. But that comes with the job.
Yeah.
But people, you know, you're going to be a lot with, you know, people who are very ill and looking for miracles and things like that. I imagine sports has got to be a major, like, release or just a distraction for him. Do we see him at a sporting event?
Funny enough, the Bears' most recent tweet, happy birthday, Sweetness. Speaking of nicknames.
Sweetness, a loser in the Maggie and Perloff greatest nickname in sports bracket. Just shocking. Goes down to me, Joe Green.
Did Francis ever go to sporting events?
Was he a big sports fan? Maybe.
I feel like he may have been at a soccer event.
I'm pretty sure he met Lionel Messi.
At a game or at the Vatican?
Sure happened.
Probably in Argentina. I don't know, to be honest.
Okay.
But I mean, you have an Argentinian Pope and Argentina wins the World Cup. I'm pretty sure they linked up somewhere.
Yeah, it's like going to the White House after you win, you know, but just some soccer version of that. It's like, instead of head of state, I'm going to go to the head of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I mean, I'd assume he'll show up to some sporting event, some game.
Like Bears-Packers week 16?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a thing, though, that, like, popes do.
No. I know, but we talked about this.
The Pope can't show up at a game. There's so much security that goes with the Pope.
Know.
I think it's more complicated.
Oh, what a mustache.
Do you guys ever hear, or you guys might be too young, the Pope Mobile?
Yeah.
I'm familiar with the Pope Mobile.
I don't know. Do they still have the Pope Mobile?
Because 100%.
Because the guy got shot in like 1980. Like it was a long time ago.
When I worked at Spectrum News, when a Pope visited the U.S., we launched a Pope Channel. So I worked on the Pope Channel.
What?
Really?
Yeah, I worked on the Pope Channel.
24/7 coverage?
24/7 coverage of the Pope for the 2 weeks, however long it was. Longest 2 weeks of my life. It was fun. It was kind of fun.
Did you actually get to be around the Pope? Did you get to go to any of it?
I was like in the studio. So I was working on our studio show that was doing everything Pope was where I was working. I was producing that.
And that was crazy. A 24-hour network.
Yes. And then when overnight they ran shows, like stories about the stuff the Pope did overnight that we taped, of course, because he was probably asleep.
I would hope so.
6 a.m. right back live.
Okay, can I ask you a question? So EJ, we just found out, worked on a 24/7 Pope channel.
Amen.
When the Pope came.
Amen.
What was the craziest idea that got pitched in a production meeting that got nixed? That got like, I'm asking for a deep cut here, but was there anyone who was like, we should do this, and then it was just like, we can't do it. It's too much, too something.
Man.
Nothing?
I don't know. I gotta think about that. I can't think of anything that was too
rejected Pope channel ideas.
Which Pope? Too crazy.
Which Pope are we talking about?
This is Francis. This is like what 2016 probably. Okay, right. Whenever he was
here. Did you guys ever consider like putting the Pope with five roommates in a New York City apartment?
Trust me, we could have. We would have. We needed that content because a 24-hour Pope. I mean, again, he's Francis. He was older, so it's not like this is someone's going to be out partying into the night, you know. So
nobody
once
told.
Once he does his daily routine after 5-6 o'clock, there's really not much else to do. Now you're recapping everything.
Nobody told the Pope that life was going to be this way.
I always thought it was funny was the guests, like getting the guests to explain like things that were happening. Like these are folks that I feel like probably never get on television unless this person hasn't been on television since the last Pope was here, which is probably 15-20 years ago, right? Like so seeing these folks and I'm like, you know, and they're explaining little things that are happening that we don't even know, like, oh, he's doing this thing right now because X, Y, like, oh, okay. Glad you're here, expert.
I like that Perloff's going reality TV show when on this. That
mine was a Friends like sitcom.
Oh.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was like Big Brother or something like that.
3-camera sitcom shoot. Live studio audience.
Someone works at a perky waitress, works at a coffee shop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Struggling actor.
Yeah. I actually saw that. There was a fake sitcom called Jesus and Friends.
Really?
Dennis Leary had a show on Comedy Central.
They would make anything.
Yeah. Patrice O'Neill played Jesus. It was a...
And
that got canceled?
No, it was sort of a mockumentary on Comedy Central. That's where I got Pope and Friends from.
Can I tell you, speaking of, not to do a hard left transition on this, and I don't mean to be respectful at all, disrespectful at all.
Oh, boy.
But earlier this week, I had a really half-baked idea about...
You were half-baked?
No, I was fully intact, but that's not going to help anything. About the Brazilian butt lift thing?
Yeah.
I just posed the theory. I just was asking questions here about whether or not a Brazilian butt lift would help an athlete who needs to get some extra power from their posterior. Because we all know working in sports, like, you get a lot of power from that area of your body.
The power comes from the butt, I believe, is a direct quote.
Yeah, thank you to Awful Announcing who aggregated that with that quote. I did say it, and we were talking about baseball players specifically. So I had a friend who is a producer reach out, said, brilliant idea. I was like, no, it's not, but thank you for lying to me. And he said, I would pay an athlete to get a BBL, see if the results, if there's any results whatsoever, and film it all for a documentary.
It's all fat that gets injected.
Listen, Manny, I'm just a little more junk in the trunk. Does it help you get a couple extra miles on the fastball? That's all I was asking. Would you watch that as a documentary?
You're still trying to promote this idea.
She's still trying to pitch it. We should get the Pope involved.
A very successful producer texted that to me.
Is he going to produce you today saying, oh, Pope and friends, let's go.
Names.
It's already happened.
Names.
Can't do that.
As you guys were reminding me after we talked to Denise.
Show me something.
Boomer and Mr. Phil Simms were enlightened about this theory, and they were talking about it earlier this morning.
Oh,
what the hell was that
no.
all about?
Oh, no. So Boomer Esiason, former league MVP, and Phil Simms, Super Bowl champion, are doing a show next door, and the BBL came up?
Oh, yes.
Oh, boy.
Oh, is that
right?
You know, I pride myself on having a good relationship with both of those guys.
I can't imagine a crowd that will like this idea less than Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason.
Not going to go over well with those guys. And it was fun being friends with them while it happened.
I just see mystified as the... They're going to be mystified by this. But it's happened before, and they're still friends with you.
Fair.
Very true.
Okay, coming up, we return to the life and complicated legacy of Hulk Hogan.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. We're remembering the life of Hulk Hogan, passed yesterday. A lot going on today. Got a lot of different opinions. It's interesting. We're 3.5 hours of the show having trouble wrapping my head around his legacy, Maggie.
No doubt, because it's a complicated one for sure. Fantastic wrestler, definitely influential, maybe the most influential wrestler as far as the, you know, expansion of professional wrestling. But as Terry Bollea, as the person inside the persona, pretty much bad guy, you know, said some very racist things and, you know, and the business of professional wrestling, he was looked at as someone who was not a team player, you know, helping Vince McMahon keep the union, keep the wrestlers from unionizing, which to this day, they still don't have a union. But to get more into it, let's welcome in Denise Salcedo, who has a Instinct Culture podcast, Bustin' Open Radio. Denise, thanks so much. It's Maggie and Perloff here. Appreciate you joining us. Before we get into the legacy and stuff of Hogan, this is obviously like, you know, taps into people's childhood, their nostalgia. And for wrestling fans, he was such a big deal. And for everyone, for the art form and professional wrestling at their peak, who do you think was the better all-around wrestler, Hulk Hogan or The Rock? And good morning.
So, good morning. First of all, happy to be here. I'm fortunate that it's under these types of circumstances. And you mentioned better wrestler. I mean, obviously, when people think wrestler, you have to say like, okay, are you talking about like overall performer? Are you talking in-ring? Are you talking career and legacy? And there goes so much into that. When you talk about like in-ring, I would probably say, it's pretty neck and neck, but I would probably go with The Rock. That's just my personal preference. But when it comes to so many other things, obviously both The Rock and Hulk Hogan's legacies are both so vast and so huge. I mean, the biggest thing, and I'm sure you guys have said this multiple times over, because you will hear this, a lot of people say the most recognizable pro wrestler is Hulk Hogan. Now, mind you, of course, the other one is The Rock. However, a lot of people, especially more the newer generation, probably know and recognize The Rock a little bit more so for his work in movies and TV and all of that. So I feel like there's a little bit of a difference there. So I would definitely say the most recognizable pro wrestler is Hulk Hogan.
Denise, what's been the reaction inside the pro wrestling world? Has it been mixed reactions? Do different people taking it a different way? Or has there been any kind of consensus?
My timeline, I am constantly on social media. The pro wrestling world is very, very vocal across all social media platforms. And my timeline has been a wild roller coaster. You can be scrolling and one second you are seeing some heartfelt messages. A lot of the heartfelt messages that I have seen online are honestly from wrestlers and legends themselves. And then I would say that the primary tweets that I'm seeing overall, though, from fans and whatnot, at least the ones that are popping up on the timeline and going viral and getting thousands of likes and retweets and all of that, are tweets that are in jest. Like, they are making jokes and having fun with tweeting all of these things about the afterlife and things of that nature. And most of you guys know what social media looks like and what Twitter looks like and what it could be with memes and all of that. So I would say it's a very, very mixed batch of what you're seeing in terms of reactions. Yesterday, I was at San Diego Comic-Con and WWE held a panel for Mattel. That's what they normally do every single year for San Diego Comic-Con. And they announce, you know, their upcoming toys and whatnot in the line. And the show was kicked off by Sam Roberts, who is the panelist on that show. And so he obviously mentions, you know, the passing of Hulk Hogan, right? It's this weird thing because you're there. You're supposed to be there to celebrate and be excited about the wrestlers that you're seeing, right? It's supposed to be a fart. It's party. It's supposed to be all of this. But Sam Roberts has to acknowledge the fact that we just lost a major wrestling legend. And when he mentioned it and, you know, spoke about his impact and his legacy to introduce the whole thing, there was a mixed reaction within the crowd. There was people that were clapping out of respect, of course. However, there were some people, not as many. Now, mind you, the applause was more heavier than the boos, but there were like a very, very small handful of people that were booing. The people directly behind me in the video that I captured, I can hear say, "Good riddance."
Oh, wow.
So that should kind of tell you what the overall mixture of emotions is. Now, people that aren't really familiar with the wrestling landscape, I have noticed, though, are more, you know, sympathetic is what I'm seeing on the internet. Like, most people that don't really know what his legacy, like, they don't know the ins and outs, right? It's the details that most of the wrestling fans know. They're a little bit more like, "Oh my God, we, you know, we lost a legend, Hulk Hogan. You've seen him in movies and TV shows, and oh my gosh." And so it's just this very complicated thing. I saw someone on Twitter say that Hulk Hogan's legacy and the way people talk about him and talk about him after his death is going to be one of the most hardest things for everyone to do. And I get it. I feel it. I see it. And it's very unfortunate because, as we all know, Hulk Hogan was one of the most loved figures in pro wrestling to then basically, you know, throughout the years kind of go in a different direction.
Denise Salcedo is joining us. Instinct Culture Podcast, Bustin' Open Radio on Sirius. Last one for me, Denise, and thanks again for joining us and getting up early for us. Is there someone in professional wrestling now that you think has the potential to be a Hulk Hogan or The Rock type figure? I know Roman Reigns is very popular, but like, my mom doesn't know Roman Reigns, you know, like, the where everyone, where they become these huge, huge, massive figures. Is there someone in the WWE or even AEW, is there someone now who you think has that Hulk Hogan potential?
So that's obviously very hard because of the impact that Hulk Hogan had on the business. So to try to replicate that is a big task to fill, right? You got big shoes to fill. You mentioned Roman Reigns, and truthfully, that's the only answer that I can give at the moment is Roman Reigns, because Roman, at some point, people are expecting him to break into Hollywood, right? Following the footsteps of The Rock. He is the one that garners these massive reactions. Definitely not. It's not going to be, you know, Hulk Hogan-like when you're talking about like similarities in terms of impact in actual pro wrestling industry. But if you want to talk about fame and people recognizing you, that is going to be Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is the one that eventually down the line, you know, your grandmas and everybody's going to be recognizing Roman Reigns. And I think that will be once he actually goes into, you know, movies and TV and film and all of that. Because the other person that's very popular is Cody Rhodes. But I would still say Roman Reigns is a couple notches above that in terms of just overall reaction and how people treat his aura and his star and his whole entire presence.
You know, I'm not wishing anything bad to happen, but Vince McMahon's 80. Like, have you ever thought of it? Where's his legacy right now in wrestling circles? After, for example, the documentary, and now a lot more people know the behind the scenes. Is he vilified, or are there still people who, you know, not hero worship Vince McMahon, but respect everything he's done? Where does he stand in the wrestling world?
So that's an interesting question, because Vince McMahon, for a long time, a lot of people have known, because, you know, people that are wrestling fans, like, they know the stories. That's a lot of that stuff that you saw in the Netflix documentaries was not new information. Yes, it had a brighter spotlight, but a lot of it was very, very well known, especially for those that are very, very within knowing and recognizing and studying wrestling history, right? You've heard the stories for so many years. They've been reported on. And so, but I think the Netflix documentary, it definitely captured a lot more people, or even people that already knew, just being reminded of it and re-seeing that information. You're just thinking like, damn, I can't believe all of this happened. I can't believe he did all this. And look at the relationship with him and his son. And it's just a whole lot, right? You can really, really break that down and talk about so many different chapters of Vince McMahon's life. But I would say within the wrestling community, of course, you're going to have those people that are always going to be diehard fans that are going to defend because he's, you know, why we have WWE in terms of where it's at this level, right? So you're always going to see those people. But I would say the majority of what I see on the internet is people basically saying like, no, I'm not going to support Vince McMahon. His legacy is not where it should be. He's a terrible person. And when the Janelle Grant case happened, I think that was really the most graphic version that at least I had ever seen of the description of the character of Vince McMahon, was reading the details, the horrifying details that happened within the Janelle Grant case. And so I think after that, a lot of people thought, man, like, I knew he wasn't a saint by any means, but now I can probably describe this man as a monster based off of what you're seeing in these like details. And so it is, his legacy is, it's unfortunately going to be, I think that if the day were to come that Vince McMahon passes, you're going to be seeing your Twitter timeline basically looking the way that it looks today for Hulk Hogan.
Denise, we're going to have to leave it there. Denise Salcedo, Instinct Culture Pod, Busted Open Radio. Appreciate your time today. We know it's busy, and good to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate that. Yeah, the Vince stuff is,
I mean, both guys, the whole sport is found, like, again, my favorite wrestler as a kid, Jimmy Snuka, incredible controversy. Roddy Piper and Randy Savage, incredibly complicated lives. And anyway, it's a weird sport in that sense, because I think it's not an accident. All the travel, all the lifestyle, like, it lends itself to a lot of personal issues. I don't think that's a mystery to anyone.
No, not at all. I was just had to look up, though, where was the Vince lawsuit, because I hadn't thought about it.
Yeah.
It's still, from what I can see, the lawsuit will be proceeding, the Janelle Grant lawsuit, where she's alleging that Vince McMahon was offering her, alleging that he would give her a job and other things in exchange for sex and some other very awful things.
By the way, one positive thing, I watched a Netflix documentary, and I remember as a kid when Hulk Hogan beat the Iron Sheik. That has got to be the biggest wrestling match, I think.
What about when Hulk Hogan, now just left turn here, off of awful Vince McMahon, into who now we're just talking about wrestling, which is kind of whiplash. But
well, I mean, it shouldn't be. I mean, it is, right?
But Hulk Hogan with Andre the Giant, I feel like, was the biggest moment, no?
I think when he beat the Iron Sheik, that was in Madison Square Garden. Like, it was like national news for the first time. That's the thing. And I think Denise had a good point. Like, Hulk was first. That's the only thing that gives him an edge over The Rock. Like, this was all groundbreaking. Like, nobody, it wasn't like that before. Where when he beat him and people knew him from the movie, it was like, oh my God, it's all coming together. To me, that seems like the most significant moment. I mean, the most important match. I mean, obviously, this is all. And then I saw the documentary. They had planned it like 3 months in advance, and there was a whole process that went into it. But it sort of changed the game.
Yeah, they also talked about how important it was for him to get in that Rocky movie. Rocky III, yeah, obviously, that is Thunderlips. That was really big in terms of crossing over. Because Rocky...
That was before he became the WWF champion.
Let's get to Bogish, who's got the latest and greatest for us. How you doing, Bogues? No way this day is not going to be like yesterday.
Not like yesterday.
And breaking news yesterday was Justin Fields. Turns out he's okay.
Yeah, we'll get to him in a second. But this is breaking news that applies directly to you, Miss Gray.
Oh, no.
A week ago, we'll all remember that you could not contain yourself because somebody farted loudly into a British Open mic. Live on TV.
Yeah, just thinking about it now makes me
all
laugh.
The glory. Unbelievably, we have just found out that the fart came from inside the house, so to speak. Scottie Scheffler was just asked about the fart on Pardon My Take.
Yeah, that was me.
Was it?
Actually?
Oh, yeah, that was me.
Was that just a complete accident?
I mean, you're out there for like 6 hours. Like, you're eating some different food over there. Some stuff's going to happen. Like,
did you know that it was that loud?
No, I mean, you never know when the boom mic's there. You never know what they're going to pick up.
You guys want to take back all your boring critiques now? The dude's ripping farts and winning majors.
Justin, put him on a rocket ship. He just owned that fart.
Yeah.
First of all, do you think he's telling the truth? Because this is a funny cell phone.
Oh, I think he is.
That's hilarious.
It doesn't seem like he's a type to make something like that up.
Yeah, that'd be weird. That's really funny.
How about that? They were just asking like, "Hey man, did you hear about it?" And he's like, "It was me.
It was me."
Yeah. Hand up.
It's like a police procedural where you know they're going to catch the bad guy. It's like the twist at the end. It was me. I did it. I killed her. I farted. Amazing.
And then we have your request from this week for research into Brazilian butt lifts making baseball hitters better. We now have a response from not one, but two former NFL star quarterbacks.
How about Maggie?
Maggie, you agree?
BBL, Brazilian butt lift.
That's really interesting. I don't know if you can lift it and make it a better athlete. I don't know.
Sometimes you just got to be born with it, man.
Yeah, yeah. And as you get older, everything falls, so don't worry about it.
What the hell was that all about?
Yeah, that's Phil Simms and Boomer Esiason. And I think a little CeeLo, our good friend, mixed in there as well on The Fan this morning. It was Chris that presented it to the group.
Yeah.
And then Phil and Boomer responded. Oh. Now, Phil did have your back, saying he has been told by Buck Showalter and other baseball people that the butt doesn't lie. You want a big butt and a high butt, but they're not sure about the surgery.
Well, Phil didn't sound like he totally was against it. He's like, let's see. Right, like Phil
seemed
open-minded about it.
I was just asking questions. Yeah. Apparently, Phil Simms may be asking the same questions.
Not shooting it down by any means.
Amazing. I've never felt better about myself that they didn't completely tear this to shreds.
That high butt thing is funny, too.
Well, what do you think the lift is about?
Yeah, I know. You know who's
it's
got
in
a high...
the title.
Carl Anthony Towns. His butt is like halfway up his body. He's got a super high butt. It's an old NBA big man thing. It's always like the guy, you know, like you're face to face with their butt cheeks. You know what I'm talking about. That's how centers are built.
I've never heard that.
Oh, yeah.
I know about big butts in baseball. I know nothing about Carl Anthony Towns' high butt and that being a plus for basketball.
That's why he runs like that.
I don't know he runs like that because he's like 6'11 and his knees are falling apart, not because his butt's by his shoulder blades.
Oh, my God!
Now I can never look at the guy again.
His butt's by his
shoulder
blades.
But his butt kind of sticks out when he runs. Anyone notices?
No, for sure.
Amazing. Also, Boomer not wrong. I mean, that's the whole reason why the Brazilian butt lift became a thing is because not everyone is blessed to be born with it. You know? That's why this exists.
Well, I'm glad I made you feel better.
Well... They did, but
kind of. Yeah, well, I'm the messenger.
I can't believe Scottie Scheffler was the farter. I'm sorry.
I didn't think there was any chance it was him.
Zero.
That's why this is crazy to me.
You could have given me 1,000 guesses. I would have went to every other person in the crowd and on the tour. Not that because he's not a person. I just don't, like, and everyone farts, but just, like, I can't believe that was him.
Yeah.
And, like, don't you... Now I'm thinking about the science of it. Like, wouldn't you want to rip that before you swing?
Well, I mean, Tiger was the famous. So that, that's all he did was walked around and tried to fart on people on the golf course, right?
Huh?
David Faraday. Tiger Woods is the most famous gas golf guy. Faraday always tells this story. Like, Tiger would let it rip all over the course, apparently.
What are they eating in these rounds? Like, we're eating different foods. Like, what, a can of beans?
Well, he said he was out in England. You know, I don't know.
But what are you eating on the golf course that's going to make you that gaseous? Like, you're going to do what? Like a head of cauliflower?
Slices of cheese, maybe.
Wouldn't you want to rip it as soon as you're hitting the golf ball? So can kind of get masked by the sound of your club hitting the ball?
Or just to get a little oomph.
I think there's a montage of Tiger farting on the course. I've seen this before.
Why have you seen that before?
No, because it's like Tiger was out.
Bookmark.
Yeah. You know, by the way, I just love the image. They're sitting there with Big Cat and PFT because, you know, Barstool celebrates the fart. We could give him that.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things where Big Cat would, for many years, do this. He'd give a long soliloquy answer, Chris. Like, I understand your criticism, and this is my answer. And then he would stick the camera by his butt and let one rip.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like high-end stuff.
Grown men.
Oh, you guys. Yeah. Okay.
No,
I'm really going to give you something to do this weekend to watch.
It's homework.
Golfers farting on the golf course.
Poll question: did you know golfers fart all the time on the golf course? I didn't.
Well, how about when that guy had to use the facilities in the creek the other day? Wasn't there a story about that?
Oh, ooh.
That was around the Masters, wasn't it?
Yeah, A guy was trying to pee in the creek, and he got too many spectators forming around him. He's like, he was frustrated. He's like, I can't find anywhere to go.
Yeah, at the Masters.
The most hallowed grounds in golf.
Well, not just that, but almost the most, like... There have to be more TV cameras on the Masters than every golf tournament combined.
Yeah, no, I know. That's his problem.
A tradition like no other. A tradition like no other.
Yeah.
See, my fear would be
peeing behind a bush at the
Masters. One of those Florida courses, and you have to go to the bathroom, so you go to the lake, and you know what's in those. Like
gators.
Gators, yeah. Like, you're doing your business, and chomp.
Oh, my gosh, bro.
Chomp what?
That's what I'm saying.
And you can't run away because your pants are on your ankles.
Oh, you can run.
I mean, we're not your six-year-old, so hopefully our pants are not
on the ground.
We're not going down to the ankles.
We're also not getting off of starting blocks either.
It's been a rough week for me.
I saw this image of a golfer running away from an alligator with his pants around his neck. That might be Happy Gilmore 2 comes out today, by the way. We just wrote the script for them.
That's not the opening scene now. I'm going to be disappointed.
Oh, my gosh. It's so funny.
Oh, speaking of funny, well, sorry, bogus.
Let me give EJ one bit of good news.
Okay, good.
Justin Fields, in uniform, on the practice field this morning, went through conditioning, was bouncing around on that foot, didn't do position drills, but he's out there, helmet, cleats, all taped up, bouncing from foot to foot. So relax, bud. You're good.
All right. I get 24 hours to settle in, and something terrible probably happened tomorrow. But
oh yeah,
wow. These 24 hours are all EJ.
You should go to Manny's therapist.
Probably. By the way,
that's just the life of a Jets fan. You're totally right.
What therapist?
I want a little apology from you guys.
Oh.
Because I called out the carted off. I'm like, when you sit shotgun, you're not carted off. And you guys were like, well, he was carted off. He was not carted off. Carted off means the cart has to come to the field to get you out of there.
He was driven to the locker
room. Aaron Rodgers wasn't carted off the field. He was limped over to the sideline and then was carted when he was on the sideline. That's why, as a Jet fan, I was like, I don't care what you're saying. I've seen this movie before.
Yeah, but it's just like the first details did not feel like carted off. I mean, it's just like he limped to the cart, then he limped off the cart into the locker room. Anyway, yeah, I don't think that's a cart off situation. If you're riding shotgun, you're not being carted off. You're just getting a lift. And that actually...
Like he hailed a cab.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a long way. You actually said, Maggie, you've been to that camp and it's a long way to the bathroom.
So did you guys realize that Justin Fields actually plays with his cell phone in his pocket so he can just call the Uber to come out and help him when he gets injured?
Yeah, I said it was a 5-minute walk. It wasn't a 5-mile walk.
Oh, golf carts are a big part of training camp. Like, you need a golf cart. And like in Green Bay, they have the bicycles. But yeah, no, he was hitching a ride.
Thank you, Bogus. 888-710-4ISN. Coming up, we will tell you what will be the best feel-good story in the NFL this year. We've got that for you next. Welcome back. Man, what a revelation from the investigative journalists that are part of my take to ask Scottie Scheffler if he heard the famous fart now at the Open Championships, and turns out it was him. Still stunned by that.
Guy's got a lot of money. Just does not have any cares anymore.
No, really doesn't.
The man does not care.
There are a couple other really good things from the internet this week. If you're looking for a great laugh, can I give you two things?
Yeah, yeah.
Number one, there was a they were revealing a new helmet for the Cleveland Browns. Oh, you see on the shore of Lake Erie. It's a massive, huge helmet. It must be 20 feet high. It's like all inflatable. You know, I think it was like this big, huge thing. And someone, you can see them clearly trying to take a wide angle photo of it, and they fall off the dock into the water. Just, it'll put a smile on your face.
Here we go, Brownies. Here we go. Woof, woof.
And this one, a little unfortunate for the person who it happened to, but Pearl, there was a guy who was accused of committing credit card fraud. He works at Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh.
And when the police came in to arrest him, he was literally in the suit, the Chuck E. Cheese, like, mouse suit. So they arrested a guy in the full Chuck E. Cheese suit, head on.
Charles Edward?
Yeah.
Damn.
Or a version of him. And all these kids are right there, and they confirmed that it was a real story.
Little Fat Five Fred. What's that movie? Where the killer,
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Five Nights at Freddy's. Yeah. Yes, I saw it. My daughter made me take me. I was the only adult who was actually scared of that movie. like Chuck E. Cheese's that killed people.
Oh no, I didn't know that. This was in Tallahassee, Florida. You have a Chuck E. Cheese in handcuffs. Yeah. No, I never saw that movie.
You talk about Hulk Hogan and not meeting your heroes. Imagine going to Chuck E. Cheese and seeing your hero Chuck E. Cheese getting arrested, getting walked out.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Apparently, when the police first arrived, he was like stamping people's like hands or taking tickets or something. And then when they came back to actually arrest him, he was in the suit. Okay, let's get to something feel good before we say goodbye for the weekend, Pearl. We're doing NFL and college football superlatives. Mm-hmm. Let's go in the NFL. What will be the feel good story of this upcoming NFL season?
I mean, I'm taking this from you, the Buffalo Bills. Everybody's waiting for them to finally win a Super Bowl.
Oh, boy.
One of the smallest market in all pro sports.
Go Bills.
Four Super Bowl losses in a row. Put all that behind you. Everybody seems to love Josh Allen. Let's go Bills.
Man, do you really think they're going to win, or you're just, that would be.
That would be. I thought the exercise, what would be the feel-good story? Yeah, I think far and away, you know, is DeMar Hamlin still on the team, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you got DeMar Hamlin. Like,
expected to play a pretty
really
good role.
There's really nothing not to like about the Bills.
I agree, although people find a way. I think the Bills and the Lions kind of occupy the same space, though.
But the Bills, I think the four Super Bowl losses gives the Bills an edge up because they got to get that out of their past.
Yeah, Vikings, though, also.
Bills would be more feel-good. The Lions, because the Lions brought that upon themselves for many, many years.
Yeah, well, yeah. It would be a feel-good story now, wouldn't it? Mine is a little bit more specific. So I started watching this guy, and we all did in college, because how could you miss him? His name is Desmond Watson. He was the defensive tackle for Florida who was the heaviest pro prospect in the history of the NFL. Probably was not drafted, and he was not invited to the combine, but his official weight was 464 pounds.
Oh, my God.
And Todd Bowles gave an update yesterday that he is down to 449 pounds for a grand total loss of 15 pounds. So,
nice.
He's getting there, and in order for him to make the roster, he's going to have to, he's going to have to lose a little bit more weight, but people are keeping an eye on him, and I think if he could get his weight down and make this roster as an undrafted free agent out of Florida, that would be a great story. He benched 225 36 times.
Oh, my God.
It's a record. He's a strong dude. Just got to get the weight under control. And so I think that'd be a really awesome feel-good story if he could make that happen, make his dreams come true.
There you go. Yeah, so. I remember him at Florida. I have not been following this. That would be pretty neat.
Wouldn't it be? I always am here for an inspirational weight loss story. So I thought that'd be pretty cool.
I've lost 20 pounds since Thanksgiving, guys.
Look at you, Manny.
Oh, yeah.
Good job.
No, let's not make this about you, man.
Sorry. Sorry, guys. Happy weekend.
Perloff always knows the right thing to say to make you feel great. That's fantastic. Thank you, EJ Stewart. Thank you to Manny Rodriguez, Andrew Bogus, Andrew Kaplan, Weedo's Coffee Drinkers. Have yourself a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.